to Dear Hank and John.
At least I prefer to think of it Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you what the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon, and
offer dubious advice.
John, do you know that Rick Astley will absolutely loan you any Disney movie?
He
except
will.
For one.
Oh, he is never gonna give you up.
Good job.
That's good. That's a good joke. Hey, so listen.
Uh-huh.
We need to talk about the elephant in the room, I think.
Is it you, the fact that you are in the room?
No.
Because I don't think we haven't told people that.
That is an elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Hank and I are in the same place at the same time. Mm-hmm. We're in lovely Southern California for assorted work obligations. But the elephant in the room is that Hank and I were making a TikTok the other day, a collab, as the young people call it. I was trying to jump on some of that Hank hype train.
Okay, good.
And
you're trying to get to that 2 million follower mark?
Which I did.
Nice.
And I saw in the reflection, like as I was recording the TikTok, I saw in the selfie camera a triangle.
Right.
On the inside
it was
of
great.
Your arm.
This is a fantastic TikTok because the face my brother made when he found out, I did not tell him that I got a tattoo, which is my first tattoo and the first tattoo in the entire Green family.
I don't even think any of our 17 cousins have tattoos.
Yeah.
You think so? Oh, we can't talk about it. We don't talk about tattoos.
I think probably got some too.
But the point is,
yeah,
that you have a tattoo. It is of a triangle.
Tuna, are you gonna bleep those out or just cut it? Okay,
they're all right. Public figures.
sure. That's how I always think about internet celebrities.
So you have a tattoo of a triangle. It is a permanent tattoo. That is correct.
Yeah.
And you chose not to tell me, or you just neglected to tell me?
I felt like it would be a thing. I just didn't want the thing to be a thing.
Like, you didn't want me to be like, I can't believe you got a tattoo, I'm so horrified?
No, at any given moment, there's something else to talk about.
I just feel like if you'd said, John, I got a tattoo, I would have been like, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. I'm really glad that you and your friends...
Well, here's what happened with Mom.
Okay.
Catherine told Mom that I got a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mom said to me, do you have a tattoo?
Oh, that's a little passive aggressive.
That's what are you trying to catch me in a lie right now, Mom? I'm 42 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Is this still happening? Anyway, I said, yes. I said, what do you know? What do you, no, I said, no, what do you know? And then we fought like I was a teenager.
Really?
No.
Oh, okay. Good. I like the tattoo. I have a couple of constructive criticisms.
Oh no! Don't do that ever.
No, one thing I've noticed about people is that they really like it when you give constructive criticisms of their tattoo that they can't change. That's on their body. Forever.
Yeah.
I do. I really like it. I love a simple geometric tattoo.
I'm a big fan of shapes.
And it's just a triangle,
mm-hmm.
so I don't have an issue with it. It's
okay.
Just the fact that you got a tattoo and didn't tell me. I thought we were close. Like, I've always thought of us as being close. And my shock was not like, I can't believe he got a tattoo. My shock was, I can't believe I'm finding out he got a tattoo while filming a TikTok with him.
But, like, isn't that the best possible way? Because you literally, we got your face on camera. In fact, if I had gotten my favorite Star Wars character on my face as a tattoo, you would have been super shocked. But because you couldn't believe the Luke on my face.
The Luke instead of look. That was tortured and not very funny. However, it reminds me that I went to Disneyland today.
I was trying to get to Disney this whole time.
Okay, good. So I went to Disneyland today.
It's like you forgot. I also went to Disney today, though. I went to California Adventure.
Right.
Because we couldn't get tickets to Disneyland.
Well, it turns out that you couldn't get tickets to Disneyland because it's not like, oh, they decided like we have enough people. It's like, oh,
this is the maximum number.
We've reached the point where one square foot of land is occupied by each person.
Yeah.
It was the most crowded experience I've ever had. I was shoulder to shoulder with so many strangers.
I'll tell you, California Adventure was busy, but it was not that busy.
Oh, it was really.
Also, halfway through the day, there was some lightning, and so that closes down like half the rides at Disney.
Yeah.
So there, like the half that were open, were like, well, I'm not going on those. I guess it's corn dog time.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I had a number of soft pretzels, which is my preferred Disney snack.
Mm.
It's only $6.75 these days for a soft pretzel. And I happen to know what the wholesale cost of a soft pretzel is because I wanted to get into a business where we have the awesome pretzel company where we send you a soft pretzel every month.
I once catered an event when, you know, you have 1,000 jobs during that period of your life where you have 1,000 jobs.
Yeah. As opposed to this period of your life?
And I came home with a lot of soft pretzels, and I put them in the freezer, and I ate a soft pretzel every day for over a month. And it was glorious.
It's a great life.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think...
Why don't I have a freezer full of soft pretzels all the time?
I know that people are not crying out for a soft pretzel subscription service, but it's one of those things that you don't think that you want or need, but then if it starts coming to your house, you'll never cancel it.
Right.
Maybe we make the first month free to hook them.
No one will ever... No one can stop.
No one can stop getting a free set of 4 soft pretzels available at their home once a month.
Brand name for the soft pretzel subscription company. 3, 2, 1.
Awesome Pretzel
go.
Club.
Oh,
it's an easy one for me. All right, let's answer some questions from our listeners.
Soft Pretzopolis.
That's the village that the soft pretzels come from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like yeah. I'm king.
It's a true company town.
Yeah.
There's only one, one place of work.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This first question comes from Holly, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, this weekend I went into a surgery for a spinal fusion, and then a couple things went wrong, and the surgeon had to slice me open." Hank! Just don't look at your phone while
I was trying to close it and it started playing.
I'll tell you one thing.
What?
One of the great things about making the podcast with Hank in person is that it's great to be in his company. One of the bad things is that you find out how little of the time he's listening to you.
What are you talking? I just noticed Lizzo left a comment on my TikTok. And Lizzo said your brother was the post before this one, so she saw yours too. And she knows that we're brothers.
Hank. Did you need to know that?
No.
You have a problem.
I have so many problems.
But no, this is... Holly asks, do you know what kind of surgery she had?
Mm-mm, not yet. You haven't said.
I did say.
The first time when I wasn't listening. I'm listening now.
This week I went into surgery for a spinal fusion, but a couple things went wrong. By the way, Holly's had a terrible day, Hank, and you're not even paying attention to it.
Her life
was in danger.
Trying to open the
And you're
questions.
Still looking at for podcast questions.
I mean, how, like, that is your computer. It's all the way over there.
Can we just briefly, though, talk about the problem and acknowledge that it's a problem?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And this isn't an intervention, but...
But it might someday be.
We may have to have one. And I don't want to. Holly has had a very serious set of events that you still have not heard about.
There's a spinal fusion surgery.
Something went wrong. My surgeon had to slice me open, sternum to pelvis, to fix it. Unfortunately, this now means I cannot really use my tummy muscles for normal body functions.
Mm-hmm.
My doctors and nurses really want me to regain these functions, starting with farting. But how does one go about relearning to fart? Restarting, departed, farting. Holly, incredible name.
Restarted, departed, farting.
Incredible name specific sign off.
Very good.
Incredible question. I'm so sorry you're going through this, Holly. Mm-hmm. Hank, you fart all the time. What's the key?
No one farts more than you.
That's not true at all. There's a bunch of people who fart more than me. But I fart a lot. And here's, I mean, I think that before you can get the muscles, first off, it never occurred to me that you need stomach muscles to fart. But then ever since I read this question, I've been doing it a lot.
And you've been farting?
Yeah.
Just for Holly's sake?
Yeah, just for research.
Okay.
Yeah, and you do need... You do need a...
Need to do some... Yeah.
So I think you start out, Holly, by... And listen, I'm not a doctor. And I'm certainly not a...
I feel like maybe the doctors... Isn't there like a physical therapist who specializes in this?
I'm sure there is. But I think what you do is you begin by fake farting.
Doing that.
Yeah, just kind
of
doing...
I think left side, first of all, body position is important.
Well, I don't know how much Holly's moving around, Hank.
I don't know. Get me on my left side for a little bit. Let me see how that goes.
If you turn on your left side, that's when you're most likely to...
That's when I feel like, if I'm like, I got some gas. If I lay on my left side, I'm like, it's like it's moving.
I just wonder, do you practice with just the stomach before you begin to practice with the lower parts?
So just like ab muscles upward.
My inclination would be to work my way down in terms of my training.
It feels like it's a deep lower ab thing, the fart.
I've got a little bit above the belly button. Got a little bit above the belly button.
Maybe everybody does it different.
You don't have anything above the belly button?
I feel like I do, yeah. I feel like I just all low, deep.
Oh, no, right. Like, I'm doing it right now. I'm right above the belly button.
If I want to trumpet out a big old blaster so that the whole room hears me.
Is there another way to do it?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's the issue.
I'm no lipetomane, but I have a lot of farts I could give you.
What's lipetomane?
Lipetomane is the man who fell into an Arctic ocean. He drew a tremendous amount of cold water during his fall into his rectum, and ever since then, received the ability to basically do anything with farts. Like he could rudimentarily speak. He could play the trumpet. You know about lipetomane? It's like the best, weirdest, mental floss style fact out there.
Is he alive?
No. This was a long time ago.
Well, that's very
and sad. Possibly wasn't real. Well, he didn't. He died of normal. He was the performer in vaudeville days.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that phrase because it's my least favorite phrase. This is going to be the Hank and John argue episode.
What did I do?
You said he died of normal causes. And I really dislike that.
Right.
Or the phrase natural causes. I really dislike the phrase natural causes. It's
okay.
Because both normal and natural causes are a way of saying he died a death that is acceptable to me. that I am able to compartmentalize without trouble.
Given the year of his birth, he's bound to be dead at this point.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I'm trying to get across.
There's no good way to do it. It's a very complicated thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, Holly, the main thing we want is an update.
We want to know how that goes. Because I think that you're going to be the expert on this.
Yeah, we just think that you potentially could have a new career on your hands once you master this. So we need to know how it goes. And if you, hopefully you don't turn into lipetomane.
Yeah.
And how old was he when he died? 88. All right,
yeah.
So he had an okay run.
Yeah. He was, and interestingly, according to this, he did not fart gas. He was able to draw air in and then expel it, which is something else.
Yeah, no, that's, I'm so glad I know that now.
I'm sure you did at one point and you just forgot.
Probably. This next question comes from Kaiza, who writes, Dear John and Hank, every day when I walk to school, I walk past a very large sign that says, Are you dreaming about invisible sounds? Wow. Is that a thing?
Like a billboard?
Is there such a thing as a visible sound? Should I be dreaming about invisible sounds? What would happen if sound was visible? I'm also partly deaf, so maybe visible sound is what I want, or is that nightmarish? What's going on here? Kaiza. So Hank, I Googled the phrase.
Yeah.
Are you dreaming about invisible sounds?
Which is what they must have wanted you to do.
And no one has ever used it on Google.
Oh, so that's not what they wanted you to do.
Or if it is what they wanted you to do, they failed miserably in their attempts to
take Or they want they intentionally picked a sentence that is a sort of lacuna.
Right.
Like a Google lacuna.
Right. Yes. And I love...
A gukuna.
A gukuna. That might be worse. I love the idea. So initially I was like, this is a dumb sentence.
Yeah.
Are you dreaming about invisible sounds?
It's like... Sounds a little bit like a 19-year-old got access to a sign.
Totally. It's pretententious, but...
I'm sorry to all 19-year-olds.
No.
You know, a 19-year-old John,
okay, yeah,
for example.
You could even say mid-career John Green got a hold of a sign. I get it. I know what you mean. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like sort of pretentious, but ultimately maybe... empty.
Like void of meaning.
Yeah. Like it sounds really good, and then the more you look at it, there's a lot of sentences like that in English literature that, like, the writer was so enamored with the sound of them that they
got in there.
They got in the book.
And it's in, like, Quotely now or whatever.
Totally. And it gets quoted all the time, but then you're like, I know what that means.
Or actually, that's something that that is known.
Right. That's an obvious... Either that's obvious or, like, I actually disagree with that sentiment.
Right. There's a lot of those.
I wrote a whole chapter about this in the Anthropocene Reviewed book, because there's that beautiful sentence in Gatsby where he talks about how, for a transitory enchanted moment, man must have looked at the present... been in the presence of this continent, seeing for the last time something commensurate with man's capacity for wonder, which is such a great line that you don't realize that, like, no. But anyway, that's this kind of sentence. But then when I found out that it's not on Google, I went all the way around to, like, oh, actually, it's a brilliant sentence.
Yeah.
Any sentence that's not on Google that makes any kind of sense is a brilliant sentence at this point. Are you dreaming about invisible sounds?
It's not long either. Are you dreaming about invisible sounds?
All sounds are invisible, right?
All sounds...
I guess, like, if a sound is really loud and it, like, blows a water glass off of a
yeah, you can... There are ways... There are times in which sound can become visible as... So, like, sound being a pressure wave. If you are in a situation where the pressure wave is strong enough and the humidity is, like, in the perfect spot, the humidity and temperature and pressure are all in the perfect spot, the sound wave can actually be visible as a condensation wave.
Oh.
So you can, like basically a cloud will form along with the sound.
But most of the time you're dreaming about sounds, you're dreaming about invisible sounds.
Oh, yeah. Also, everything else is invisible when you're dreaming.
No.
In that it is inside of the mind.
Oh, God. Was that true? But if I have a dream where I see things, those things are visible, right?
Well, we're not going to get to the bottom of this one.
Okay. But I think it's a construct. I have gone all the way from thinking I don't like the sentence to thinking that I do like the sentence.
Yeah.
And
are you dreaming about invisible sounds? Is that it?
Yeah.
They're called information voids. When someone is like, you should Google this specific string, and that takes you... So it's basically like, instead of having a URL, you're like, I have been the only person to say this phrase a bunch. And so you can search for that. It's often used in sort of misinformation circles where, like, so that you can get people to the misinformation around Google's, like, desire to not promote misinformation, you create a new term for something, and that's a void. Where
is that
the
true?
Only thing you search for it is things that they want to come up.
Is that true?
Yeah. An information void.
Okay, but for the record, if you Google, are you dreaming about invisible sounds, it's not like a bunch of conspiracy theories.
No. But this isn't an information void because it doesn't exist at all.
Oh, okay.
So information voids actually have a thing that takes you, but it takes you to the specific thing that they want you to see.
Okay, so the idea is that eventually, maybe they're laying the groundwork now.
Right. And, I mean, I want to know more about this sign. Is it like on a Wendy's, like the letters under the Wendy's sign, or is it a billboard?
I really
is it just
hope
like a yard sign, like a political?
I hope it's a Wendy's with, like, an ambitious owner/person who puts up the daily messages of affirmation and sales.
I mean, Wendy's going all in on cryptic.
Yes.
Sign messages.
Wendy's going full Night Vale.
Yes.
Would be amazing.
Amazing.
And they totally rebrand, and it's like blue and black and gray and silvery.
Yeah.
And it's sort of Haunted Mansion vibe when you go into a Wendy's. And there's like whispers coming from the speakers instead of music. There's like whispers coming from the speakers.
Instead of country music.
That are like, do you feel a void emerging within you that's like a canyon, except you yourself must cross it?
You have to cross the canyon that is yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. Welcome to Wendy's. Are you dreaming of invisible sounds?
Would you like to try the new triple bacon cheddar sandwich? And while you're at it, would you like to try to engage for the first time with the reality of your situation as a human, frail, dying, afraid?
And ultimately, alone.
I mean, I know Wendy's has like a terrible time recruiting employees right now because they don't pay enough, but like that seems like a great way to get around it. I'd go work at Wendy's if it became like a haunted mansion of existential dread.
Would you like to supersize your dread? Would you like a biggie-sized crisis with that? Wendy's is biggie, right?
The only way I'm giving you a Frosty is if you look me dead in the eyes and say, I don't know why I'm here, and I understand that I never will. Let's move on to this question from Megan. I don't know if we answered the question, but I think we...
I don't know what it means.
I think we did what we were supposed to do.
Yeah.
Megan says, can you use a vacuum inside a vacuum?
No. Can you use a vacuum? And no.
No.
I'm there. I'm there. You definitely can't. A vacuum works by creating an area of low pressure, and you pull things into that area of low pressure. You can't create a lower pressure than a vacuum.
Okay, but that's... Doesn't it do it by electricity?
What? You have to... Okay. Yes, you use the electricity to create the area of low pressure.
But,
and that pulls stuff from the area of high pressure.
Okay, but my argument is this. If you, what a vacuum does at its core...
A vacuum cleaner. Okay.
Yes. I don't know what a vacuum of space does at its core. I don't think any of us do. That's actually one of the things that Wendy's wants us to talk about.
What is the difference between emptiness and nothing?
Welcome to
Wendy's.
Welcome to Wendy's. We understand that vacuums exist, but why?
Welcome to Wendy's. The space between two things is nothing, but it exists.
Welcome to Wendy's. The space between galaxies exists, is nothing, and is expanding at an accelerating rate. So here's my argument about a vacuum cleaner. Mm-hmm. If you could somehow plug it in a vacuum, or get electricity to it in a vacuum,
right,
the wheels would still spin.
Yeah.
So the wheels would spin. In that sense, you can vacuum a vacuum. You're not going to get anything up into your hoozy wuts, but like you're not going to do that anyway.
You're not vacuuming the vacuum, though. You're the thing's spinning, but nothing's happening.
You're wondering if you can get
you're not sucking anything into.
Yes, of course. How there's nothing to suck in.
Well, no. It's not just that. It's like it's.
But I would actually argue that is the main thing.
Yeah.
If there's nothing to suck in, then like the vacuum, it doesn't matter what the pressure differentiation is. There's no thing
to suck.
There's no thing to arrive in the bag.
It feels like it matters to me.
Why?
I don't know. It feels like it matters. So like the reason that you can't vacuum a vacuum isn't that there's nothing there.
It seems to me that it is.
Well, so if the pressure inside of the vacuum was a positive pressure, and the thing outside of the vacuum was the same positive pressure, it still would not vacuum. It would not do a vacuuming, even if there was something there. And so the problem is that the pressure is inside and outside of the vacuum cleaner is the same.
I think the problem is that there is nothing to vacuum.
Well, I think it's totally possible that we have proved the same fact in two different ways. I think that's the situation.
Well, I think my proof is vastly more elegant.
Well, that now we're mathematicians. Like that's what math actually is. That's the real math is mathematicians arguing about whether their proof is better.
I feel like,
regardless of the fact that both of them do prove the thing.
I feel like my proof would be in the annals of mathematics and your proof would be in like vacuum monthly.
I disagree. I think mine is more mathy and yours is more like the vacuum doesn't have anything to suck on.
But I would argue that is the much more fundamental issue.
Welcome to Wendy's.
All right. Hank, there have been a number of questions related to horses in Montana.
Okay.
So I think, I don't know if some viral YouTuber made a video. I don't know what happened, but I feel like we have to answer one of them. This one is from Alexis, who writes, Dear John and Hank, I know Hank lives in Montana. Mm-hmm. I just recently heard that there is a law that if you ride a horse to school, the principal must care for that horse while the student is in class. Is this a real thing? Does the principal have to have knowledge on horse care in order to get the job as a principal in Montana? Could I have been saving money on gas this whole time by riding a horse, keeping it real, Alexis?
Well,
their last name is real.
John, I have taken some time to Google, and it seems like this is a real law.
Yeah. But it's one of those laws, like a lot of these, like anytime you hear like a weird law on Today I Learned on the subreddit, or you hear a weird law on a YouTube video compilation, it's worth remembering that most of these weird laws are still on the books precisely because they are never a problem.
Yeah.
Why would you get rid of a law that is not a problem?
It's not like it's taking up a bunch of space.
Nobody's like, wow, so many people are bringing their horses to school and the principals have to care for them and it's a massive, unending issue.
Though apparently 3 or so years ago, a bunch of students found out about the law and did ride their horses to school and that the school had to take care of them.
So now
you're the reason that they're going to have to get rid of the law.
Right,
which, of course, like they will if it becomes a problem.
They will if enough kids start.
And there was a time when it was important for people who would get to school on their horses to have some place, some like way to have their horses be taken care of while they were in school. Otherwise, kids couldn't get educations.
Yeah.
But nobody rides their horses to school anymore in Montana.
Nobody. Three kids did a couple years ago.
It's
not common.
And the folks in Montana generally find the horse stereotypes to be a bit much.
Oh, do they?
We do. We hear it a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're like, Zoya, the horses? And it's like, it's just a state.
Do you have a horse? No. Well, I didn't think you had a horse, but I also didn't think you had a tattoo. So life's full of surprises for me.
Yeah, welcome to Wendy's. You never know if someone has a horse. This question is from Caitlin, who asks, Dear Hank and John, I have an issue with the phrase, keep an ear out for.
Mm.
Like, what? How do I keep an ear out? Is this just like a semi-mid-south Oklahoma saying? Thank you. Keeping an ear out, Caitlin.
I have heard this before. I have a theory about it that's probably wrong,
mm-hmm.
which is that places where you say keep an ear out are places where, I don't want to say, Caitlin, that there's not a lot to look at, but places where sound travels. Let me say this differently. I have heard this before. We're more accustomed, I think, to hearing keep an eye out for something.
Yeah.
Keep looking for something.
Still awful weird.
It is weird. But what I like about keep an ear out for is that it's much more realistic because sound travels over very long distances. And so you can keep an ear out for the train even if you can't see it because you'll be like, the train is here. I can tell from the beeping.
Yeah, well, I like the idea with a hoopity hoop. I like the idea that you're not keeping an eye out. Like, if you're not keeping an eye out for something, you just, like, closed your eyes. You're like, I'm done. I'm not looking. I put the sleep mask on and wrap my head with a nice bandage.
Yeah. I think when people say keep an eye out for, they mostly mean, like, hey, don't check TikTok every 13 seconds. Like,
keep an eye out.
Yeah, keep an eye out.
Keep an eye out for that package.
But I'd rather keep an ear out. Like, if I was...
I'd honestly rather have all of my sensing organs in.
Mm.
Like, connected to my body. Like, not... Like, definitely not out of my house.
Mm.
Out of what?
What about... Yeah, I think it's keep an ear... Out of what? Out of what?
Welcome to Wendy's.
Keep an ear out for... Keep an ear out
for
what?
It's not of, though. Keep an ear out for.
But
what am I keeping it out of for something? Prepositions.
It's the more I think about it, the less I like it.
Yeah.
Which is the opposite of our Wendy's idea. I actually think
that is
a rebrand that would crush.
Yeah, but I don't even think that have to do the whole thing. I think that just the messages on the board.
Yeah, well, you start with just the messages on the board, and then it gets creepier and creepier and creepier, and people are like, why is Wendy's going full creepy? And all the kids are like, we shouldn't go to Taco Bell anymore.
Yeah, Taco Bell became cool for, and it still has been like the cool kid place.
For like 30 years, they have to reinvent themselves every 6 months.
I don't know how they do it, but they do it. Wendy's, it's right there. Gotta get super weird.
You gotta out-weird them. Mm-hmm. You've gotta go to a place where Taco Bell's like, that doesn't seem safe for our brand, and our brand is low quality. I love it. I love it so much. It reminds me, actually, that today's podcast is brought to you by Hank and John's takeover of Wendy's. And John's hostile takeover of Wendy's. We're pouring all of our dear Hank and John Patreon money. Forget it. We're not paying for SciShow and Crash Course and Ars Poetic anymore. We're hoarding it so that we can have a hostile takeover of Wendy's. How much does Wendy's cost?
We're going to need all of everybody to give us $10 each. It can't be that much. For Wendy's. How much is it? John just looked it up. What's Wendy's?
$3 billion.
$3 billion. Peanuts. How many people listen to Dear Hank and John?
I mean, enough that they each have to give $1 million.
What's 3 billion divided by 200,000?
You'll be shocked.
15? The answer is 15,000.
I know.
Okay. So we need everybody to give us 15,000. I mean, that's less than most college educations, and you get Wendy's.
You're saying first off, what we're saying to them is
take out some student loans.
We're saying to them,
don't get an education.
Give us your life savings. Mm-hmm. Because we are going to decrease its size.
Yeah. We're gonna make Wendy's awful.
We are gonna take.
It's gonna maybe not exist in like a matter of months. What I can tell you is our branding ideas are probably pretty bad, but our how to run a restaurant ideas are definitely bad.
Terrible,
so bad.
Terrible.
Like our like meat logistics knowledge is very low.
So true.
Like, I don't know what I don't know about meat logistics. The unknown unknowns are many.
Yeah, take it from the two guys whose favorite fast food restaurant Rax was killed by a single advertising campaign. We can do this.
This podcast is also brought to you by Meat Logistics. Meat Logistics. Somebody's got to do it. But not us.
Good work if you can get it. Today's podcast is also brought to you by the vacuum vacuum.
Oh.
The reason it won't work is because you can't vacuum nothing.
And also this podcast is brought to you by an ear. An ear!
Keep it out! Keep one out for something. We also have a Project for Awesome message from Alec from Minneapolis. To my family, now with 50% more humans. Fitz, welcome to the Earth, buddy. I can't wait to watch you grow and help guide you to be a loving, thoughtful, compassionate human. Hannah, congratulations and welcome to motherhood. You will be an amazing mother, and you are exactly the partner I want to spend the rest of my life with. I love you both very much.
Lovely. Thank you so much for that.
That is beautiful. Welcome to the world, Fitz.
John.
You know what Kurt Vonnegut said about that?
No one.
Welcome to the world, babies. It's hot, wet, and crowded. And there's only one rule. You gotta be kind.
Ah. John, I have a question I'd like to ask you because I hope that you have an answer for it because I also would like to know it desperately. It's from Maddie who asks, Dear Hank and John, what... Hank, no, don't ask me. Ask John. Why is an absolutely remarkable thing priced at $40 for a hardcover? I wanted to buy the hardcover since listening to your podcast, but I definitely can't afford it at $40.
Yeah.
I also don't recall ever seeing a hardcover priced that high. Appreciate you so much, but I am confused. 23 without finding a name specific anything, Maddie. What the heck's going on? That's wild. I do not like this.
The first thing you should know, Maddie, is that Hank does not decide the price of the hardcover.
Sure, but that's also not the price of the hardcover.
Right, but the hardcover is not widely available. This is a very weird thing about publishing that it just needs to get over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people... I'll give you a counterexample.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, on Amazon, the only paperback edition of The Anthropocene Reviewed is the large print edition, which is for, you know, people who like to read with much larger text.
Yeah.
And the margins
That's
are
very
really
weird.
Small.
Yeah.
But the reason is, it's because the paperback isn't out yet, because traditionally, hardcovers come out,
yeah,
and then a year later, paperbacks come out.
Mm-hmm.
But contemporary readers, a lot of them don't know about this weird rule that exists for no reason,
yeah,
except to try to generate more money. But they, and so they expect, I think quite reasonably, to be mm-hmm. able to choose how they want to read a book. If they want to read a book on audio,
right,
they want to be able to do that from day one.
Yep.
Paperback from day one, hardcover from day mm-hmm. one. If they want to buy like a special, really beautiful edition
yep.
with an amazing cover, they want to be able to do that from day one.
Yeah.
And some people have figured this out, but these billion-dollar publishing companies simply haven't figured it out.
Well, they desperately don't want to figure it out because they like to have that more expensive year of hardcovers before paperbacks, which are cheaper.
Yes, yes. And I guess I understand that, but if they were making premium hardcovers, they could more than make up for that, right? If there was actually a $40
mm-hmm. and it was worth it,
an absolutely remarkable yeah. thing that was worth $40 because
but right now this hardcover is not being sold by Amazon or my publisher. It's being sold
by some random person.
Yeah.
And that's what happens at Amazon when a book is no longer available from the publisher
mm-hmm.
because the publisher is like, "Oh no, the hardcover's over. We're in paperback now."
Right.
And we'll be in paperback.
And we will never make hardcovers again.
We'll be in paperback for the rest of forever because that's how books work.
Right.
But that's only how books work to publishers.
Because that's what they've decided.
To consumers.
Yeah.
And so I would argue that if you have both the hardcover and the paperback available at the same time and you're just meeting the needs of your customers,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them will still buy hardcovers because they're pretty, they like to have them on a shelf, they hold up better,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Yeah.
And the ones who want paperbacks can get paperbacks.
And instead of the situation where right now a lot of people wait for a year.
Yeah.
And so you get two, like, you don't get like all the sales at once.
Yeah, you don't get all the
so you
and you also don't like build up the
as much attention and interest
yeah, and the word of mouth
yeah.
and everything. And this was something I think we've seen with An Absolutely Remarkable Thing because it is such a good book. It had its like big initial life where it sold a lot of copies, mostly to people who knew who you were, who were nerdfighters, etc. And then it's had this second life where the rest of the world has discovered it. But I actually think that second life would have happened faster
mm-hmm.
if the paperback had been available immediately.
Yeah.
And so I feel quite strongly that this is the wrong way to do it. And the fact that right now the Anthropocene Reviewed large print edition is selling better on Amazon than the Anthropocene Reviewed hardcover,
wow.
which is the edition that like my publisher thinks
yeah.
is the only edition. And
wow.
the large print edition is just something they do as an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
But like, people don't understand that. So they don't think they're buying the large print edition in the vast majority of cases. They think they're just buying a paperback that costs 60 cents less and they like paperbacks.
Yeah. They want a paperback. Well, what I can say is that DFTBA.com has a hardcover of An Absolutely Remarkable Thing for sale for $10.80.
there you go.
We've set that at a very cheap price. It's
yeah.
cheaper than the paperback on Amazon.
Yeah.
But you do have to pay for shipping, which is probably $5 or $6.
But it's still way less than 40.
Yes. So that is available, and if everybody could go and get it, that would be great because there are taking up space in the warehouse and Josh would like me to get rid of them.
All right, Hank, before we get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, I just have to have a quick response while we're talking about our books to this question from Cooper, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, on this week's episode of the pod, Hank mentioned that we are stuck with the QWERTY keyboard layout forever, which got me wanting to know more. How did this layout originate? Is there a layout that's more practical? How would you rearrange it? Cooper." Well, Cooper, as it happens, I, not to brag, have written what I think is the authoritative text on the QWERTY keyboard and how it got that way.
Better than what you are going to read everywhere else.
Well, I don't think that anyone's ever written
about
it.
Well, a lot of people like write little blog posts.
Oh, yeah. Mine is much more researched than those blog posts. A lot of those blog posts, sadly, are wrong because like their story is really fun a lot of times. And
I
hope that's true.
The thing that comes along, you know?
But the real story of the QWERTY keyboard, there are a lot of people who've written about it, but I have also written about it in the Anthropocene Reviewed book. There's a whole chapter about it if you want to learn more. So get that book, but don't get the large print edition. Just get the regular hardcover. Or get the large print edition if you want it. It's up to you. Hank, what is the news from Mars?
So you're not going to tell us anything about the QWERTY keyboard. You're just going to make people buy a book.
But I just
sold people my book.
It,
mine's $10.80.
Mine's like $16.
You can get both.
Get both. All I'll say about the QWERTY keyboard layout is the reason nobody's ever written about it is because people generally don't write about slow, iterative change that involved thousands or tens of thousands of collaborators working together rather than like one individual genius emerging from nowhere to take over the world.
Yes, but we will not change the keyboard layout unless we lose keyboards for a period of time and then need to get them back. Mm-hmm. That is the only way that it would happen, and that I think would be a bad outcome. Mm-hmm. In the exact same way that alphabetical order is older than any word.
Right. Right. What's the news from Mars?
In news from Mars, the Perseverance rover is traveling and seeing interesting sights along the way. Thanks to Mastcam Z, which is a camera, we're getting to see some of those interesting things. And on June 12th, the rover snapped a picture of a weird rock formation in the Jezero crater. You want to look at this rock.
Yeah.
It's so freaking cool. On one side of the picture, it kind of looks like Pride Rock from The Lion King, except if Pride Rock also looked like a snake with its mouth open. And in the background, you can also see a boulder balancing on top of another larger rock. It's just sitting there.
Oh, like a cairn.
Yeah, like somebody did that, but they didn't. James Rice, a geologist working on the Mastcam Z team, told Gizmodo that those rocks are sometimes called PBRs, which stands for precariously balanced rocks. This rock might have formed when wind or chemical erosion wore down local bedrock and shaped it.
Do you think there's any possibility that that guy's buddies were like, listen, if you can get the,
if you could,
the word PBR into a
Yeah, they were, story, they were drink, they were drinking.
I will buy you a case of PBRs.
So the PBRs are scientifically useful because they can tell you about the Mars quakes that did not happen. Because when you got a rock balanced on another rock, then you can tell the ground around it has not moved enough to knock that rock over. Yeah. In that capacity, PBRs are also sometimes known as reverse seismometers.
Oh, I love it.
On June 13th, the rover also took a picture of a silvery material found stuck between two rocks.
It was our trash.
It's just a pop bottle top.
It is.
Well, yeah. It's some foil that came from the thermal blanket.
So we got some PBRs on Mars.
We got some PBRs on Mars and some reverse seismometers on Mars.
Well, the news from AFC Wimbledon is that Johnny Jackson, our new manager, has put together, with the help of the rest of the club, our preseason schedule. The season starts in August, Hank, so we're getting there.
Mm-hmm.
We don't currently have enough players, but that's neither here nor there.
You'll get them.
We have a preseason schedule. We are playing three teams at Plow Lane, so mm-hmm. like three teams at home. Ipswich Town, mm-hmm. Best known for being having a logo where a horse is holding a football. It's a wild logo. Reading Football Club, which is spelled like Reading, but pronounced Reading.
Mm-hmm.
And Oxford United.
Because the Reading Football Club would be a totally different thing.
Totally different vibe. And Oxford United. So if you happen to be in London mm-hmm. in July or early August, I cannot recommend enough going to all three of those games. I think you can get tickets to all three games for just £24 or $6,000. I don't know how it works.
So you get tickets to the games, and if AFC Wimbledon has enough players, yes, they will play sports.
That's right. They'll play sports, and you can see the word DFTBA on the back of
still doing it, huh?
Their shorts.
Is that better? Is the fact that they got demoted like good for our sponsorship dollars? Is it less now?
I requested the same price.
Okay.
They didn't raise the price on us when they got promoted. So I figured we wouldn't cut the price on them when they got demoted.
That's great. Yeah.
Well, Hank, thank you for potting with me. We're off to eat dinner with our families.
Yes. But before we do that, we're going to record This Week in Stuff, our patron-only podcast, where you can find out at patreon.com/...
Dear Hank and John.
Thanks, John. It.
This podcast is edited by Joseph Tunamedish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. Our head of community and communications is... Julia Bloom.
Yeah.
Julia Bloom, who we just got to hang out with.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
Yeah.
Also really fun to hang out with everybody else on the team. Anyway, the music that you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say at our local Wendy's, the end is coming.
Don't forget to be awesome.